Hello, you're listening to Career Conversations, the latest series that's part of the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters Live. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist, and together we'll meet experts in cooking, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is Wilfred Emmanuel Jones, MBE, otherwise known as founder of farm foods brand The Black Farmer. Now, Wilfred is an opinionated man who doesn't hold back, and we did have to beep out a few swear words. But you can't deny his passion and that he's one of a kind. A self-proclaimed guy from the gutter, one of nine children growing up in inner-city poverty, he has utterly transformed his life and built a business empire. His main advice to young people listening is be audacious. I'll be back after with some key info about becoming a food and drinks entrepreneur. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast.
I'm from a family of 11, and I want you to imagine this. There's 11 of us living in a two-up, two-down terrace house. So it was very, very cramped, and we were really, really poor. I can remember my mother trying to feed 11 people with one chicken, and it ain't those sort of chickens that you could now buy from the supermarkets. These were the old boiler chickens that were, you know, you had to cook for bloody days at end just to be able to get any tenderness out of it.
Can you tell us a bit about your farm, how you ended up there, how you ended up becoming a farmer?
Well, the beginning of my story really starts from when I was a kid. Now, I'm of the Windrush generation. And so you all know the story that people like my parents had the opportunity to come over here in the 50s and 60s. And what traditionally happened was that the children were left behind. So my sister and I were left in Jamaica as my parents came over here until they made enough money to then send for us. And I was born in a place called Clarendon, which is right in the heart of Jamaica. And if you went there today, you see quite a lot of subsistence farmers. It's sort of farming land. And we basically moved to where the work was. So you'd find a lot of people from immigrant communities went to work. You lived in the likes of Birmingham and London and Leeds, and we were in Birmingham. Now, as a way of subsidizing the family income, my father had an allotment, and it was my responsibility as the eldest boy to look after this allotment. And I absolutely loved being on this allotment because it was my oasis away from the misery that I was surrounded by, because, you know, I'm from a place called Small Heath in Birmingham. It's the pits, you know, it's one of those classic inner city areas that's devoid of hope, devoid of opportunity. I'm 65 years old now, and even now I tremble at the thought of being brought up in that place. It was bloody awful. This allotment was a fantastic oasis for me. And this is where my story begins in a way, because I can remember at the age of 11, I was just 11 years old, and I made myself a promise that one day I would like to own my own farm.
Are you somebody who has always dreamed big and had big ambition?
You can't really achieve anything in life unless you are prepared to be audacious, to be put it out there and ask for it. And let me give you some idea about my audacity. I can remember at the time, there used to be a fantastic BBC series on called 40 Minutes. They used to make fantastic social documentaries. And I said to all of my family and friends, you know what? I want to get a job as a producer director making TV programs for the BBC. So they all looked at me and just thought, this guy's bloody nuts, basically. You know, he could hardly read and write BBC then. And in those days, it's very, very much full of the Oxbridge types. But, you know, I'm a great believer that if you're audacious enough and you're focused, again, focused and passionate, things will come your way. And I can remember writing to everybody. Not one of them would wrote back to me. Tried ringing them. They wouldn't take my calls. At the time, there was a big studio in Birmingham called BBC Pebble Mill. And they used to have security gates letting people in and out of the buildings. So I went up to the security guards and I said, look, I'll open the gates for you, because they hated getting out of their warm, cozy huts. I'll open the gates for you to let people in and out for nothing. And they said, well, yeah, you know, this guy's nuts to do that. We'll let him do that. I then met the cleaners who were then cleaning the offices. So I said, right, to the cleaners, can I come and help you clean the offices? And they said, again, somebody's going to do it for nothing. They said, yes. And then this happened. I met a guy, and I still remember his name now to this day. His name was Jock Gallagher. And I said, look, you know, I really want to get a job in television and all this sort of stuff. And he spoke to me for about an hour. And he says, look, you ain't the sort of person that we employ in television because you don't have the education and you've got a bit of an attitude problem. And then he said this. He said, look, this is something, he said, he might live to regret. But he said, I'm going to give you a job as a runner for about 3 months and see what happens. Now, that man, having the courage to give me that break, then started a very, very long career in television. And it's because I had audacious dreams. So I started off as a runner. I then went on to be a researcher. And then my big claim to fame is back in the day, there used to be a very famous BBC series on called 40 Minutes. That was the program that started the whole culture of the celebrity chefs. And it was my job to break in all of the big name chefs. So I gave Gordon Ramsay his first break in television. People like James Martin, Raymond Blanc, any big chef you could think of, it was my job to break them in because they didn't really understand film at that day. I can remember Gordon Ramsay coming to my house where I had to teach him how to perform in front of the camera because in those days we used to shoot on film and film was very, very expensive. Not like this day, you shoot video and you could run for ages. It's like £100 a roll. So everybody needed to know what they were doing. And my boss at the time knew that, you know, these chefs, well, you would probably know this, these chefs are hard bastards. They're not taking it from anybody. And that the Oxford types were quite intimidated by them. And, you know, these chefs are the guys that would take you outside to sort a problem out. And my boss knew that I was the sort of person that would oblige. They would not intimidate me. And so, you know, there's many stories I could tell you where I had to tell these people, I'm the boss, you do as I say, or f*** off. So lots of that. So that was my reputation back in the day.
That sounds very much like the sort of thing Gordon Ramsay would say. Maybe he got it from you.
That's right, yeah. Gordon Ramsay would tell you the sort of stuff where, you know, he had to shut the f*** up and do as I said. So I travel the world making food and drink programs. And, you know, and you've got to think that this is a guy from the gutter with no qualifications at all, traveling the world, making food programs. And that comes about being audacious enough to think big.
I love it. I love that level of ambition, even from a young age. Let's talk more about your audacity. I can go into any supermarket or shop online, and it's very easy to spot Black Farmer foods on the supermarket shelves. There's a logo of a man with a hat on holding a big British flag. That's you, right?
That's right, yeah. So let me tell you how this brand came about. When I bought my farm, the thing about life is this, is that you can't worry about what other people think. And I say that when people want to do anything quite big, you have to decide whether you want to be to belong or to be. If you want to belong, you have to operate by the rules of the community. To be, you got to be prepared to step out and follow your dream and ambition. So when I bought this farm, what I noticed was there's this big gap between urban and rural Britain, and it's outsiders who see opportunities because you're not caught up with the sort of the general way that people do things. So I thought, actually, there's a real opportunity to create a brand here that will help bridge this gap between urban and rural. And I thought what I wanted to do is that I wanted to do something that was a quintessential British brand. That's why you got there's me holding the flag, because I did not want this to be seen as an ethnic brand. Because the moment you're black, they'll think this is all about, you know, the world food aisles and that's it's an ethnic route. And says this is a very, very British brand. I just happen to be black and I'm there celebrating Britishness. And I thought, actually, what is a very British product? And I thought, that's sausage. So I thought, right, I'm going to develop a bloody good sausage. And I thought, right, I'll do a gluten-free sausage. And then a lot of people spend their time thinking about what are they going to call their brands? What's the name they're going to call it? And then one day it came to me, all of my next door neighbors used to call me the Black Farmer. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty good brand name. Not only is it a really good brand name, no one else out there can nick the idea because there's no black farmers. And it also has an edge to it. People are not too sure about whether it's politically correct or not. You know, whether, oh, in this woke age that we live in, people are really sensitive about what you should and you shouldn't say. Now, this is another important lesson for everybody here. Even I thought, you know, this is a bit risky, Wilfred. You better go and test this. Go and research it, okay? So I went out and I researched, did masses of research. about the name, should I call it the Black Farmer? And all the research comes back and said, do not call it the Black Farmer, because it will upset people, it will offend people, etc. And the lesson is this. Those people who live on evidence, data, research, this is the lesson. Research will tell you what people were thinking yesterday. Research could tell you what people are thinking today. But research cannot tell you what people are thinking tomorrow. That is where you have to have the courage to follow your own dream, your own desires, rather than waiting to see where the pack's at. If you wait, you've lost the opportunity. You're no longer innovating. So when you're young, don't wait. Just go for it. Don't worry about what the bloody evidence and research are showing you.
You are super successful. You did it yourself. But have there been any mistakes along the way, either that you regret or that you learned from?
The most important thing in life is mistakes. Now, most people think that the thing to do is not to make mistakes. Now, the only way to measure whether you are living your life to the maximum is to look back every 3 months and say, where did I make a mistake? Because if you can look back and you've seen you've fucked up, you made up mistakes, that means you're living. You're living your life to the maximum. But if you're living the life and think, well, I can't mess up, I can't get this wrong, you know, you're slumming it. You know, you might as well just exist. And so that is the measure of that your life is really of worth and value because of the ups and mistakes. So, you know, in my company, the philosophy is pretty simple. Never ask for permission, just ask for forgiveness. Don't wait and be worried about getting it wrong. It's expected to get wrong. Because that's how. So the price of going forward at pace is getting things wrong, learning from that, and to keep going. But if you're in an environment where, oh God, we can't get this wrong, it's not a very nice environment to live in. So, yeah, I celebrate the mistakes, and I'm making them all the time, all the time, all the time. But that tells me I'm alive.
What was the turning point for you when you went from being, let's say, just a farmer to also being a recognised brand, a public figure?
Well, I mean, I'm not really a hands-on bloody farmer. So, you know, I'm not going to sit down and pretend I'm out there milking the cows and doing all that. I don't do that sort of thing. I have other people that does that for me. What I've always wanted to do was to create a brand. I'm a brand man. I'm a marketeer. And that actually, when you create a brilliant brand, it doesn't matter what you sell. So if you look at some of these phenomenal brands of our age, like Apple, you know, and again, when we talk about audacity, it's very difficult for us to sort of comprehend this now. But the audacity to go from doing computers to a phone is a pretty audacious thing to do when Steve Jobs decided that's the route we're going to do. That's a visionary. That's been audacious. And it's all about what people buy is they buy an idea. They buy an ideal. They buy for what you stand for. And then it's reflected in the products that you sell. So everything about my brand, it's all about very, very much supporting Britishness. It's all about premium quality, premium flavors. And it's all about bringing about a change. That's the things that I'm really excited about. How could I use my story, my achievement to bring about the change, and the brand then sort of reflects that. And one of the things I think is really interesting for young people today, they could get their heads together, it's a brilliant time for brands. And what happened in the 80s and 90s is that the supermarkets dominated the food chain by commoditizing everything. That's why it's everything's own label, it's all about price. And that the consumer doesn't really have a relationship with the people who are producing their foods. That is about to change. Now, in order to have a relationship with the consumer, people have to understand that even though the technology allows us to communicate at fast speed, it doesn't therefore develop a relationship. And the people who will succeed are the people that would recognize that, okay, yes, it's fast to send a text, and yes, it's fast to do an email, but it doesn't develop a relationship. That's transactional. By picking up the bloody phone, picking up the goddamn phone and talking to people, that is how you create relationships. And those people who will get that are the ones who are going to make a fortune in the future. Because what is happening especially with a lot of young people, is that they're actually losing the skills that people of our age had to have, that actually a flick of an eyebrow means this, a gesture means that. They're losing all these skills because the way we now communicate has made it a lot easier, but it doesn't develop relationships. And brands are about developing relationships.
Let's talk about where the Black Farmer is going. What's your hope now for the future?
We started off selling all of our products in the supermarkets, and we've got listing everywhere there. And then we also are going into sort of food service. And last year, we then start a direct-to-consumer business. And that is where there's a phenomenal opportunities for people in the future. Because, you know, what does not make sense is that how people do their shopping at the moment. Getting your car, going to the supermarket, taking something on the shelf, putting it in the basket, taking it out, going into the car. It doesn't make sense. So in the next 10 years, supermarkets, as we know them, will not exist because it's just a pain in the ass. And so therefore, it will either be the Amazon model where people buy their big stuff that will be delivered, and then buying food will then become a leisure activity. So people would go out and they'd be enjoying whether they're eating or buying interesting things. So that's me, people discovering lots of new flavors, lots of new people. So it's really, really exciting. And then it's really how you get those produce to people. That's why we're really going big on the direct-to-consumer and business. And that's why we have a fulfillment center in Chippenham. And then the next thing is to have something which I'm calling the Black Farmer Experience, which is going to be somewhere like Daylesford, where it's a destination. Everybody's around. I'm going to the Black Farmer Experience. They'll have a farm shop. They'll have a restaurant. They'll have a conference center. They'll have a wedding venue. And it basically, it's going to be a bridge between urban and rural Britain, where people from all sorts of backgrounds could go and feel comfortable. It'd be a place to be inspired, where anybody who's thinking about entrepreneur, I can see myself in my dotage giving lectures about entrepreneurialism and how to start up and things like that. That's the big thing. So part of getting this centre at Chippenham is also I'm looking for somewhere around that sort of area, because that's M4, M5 area. So when people are going down south, so that's what I want to do.
It's me again. So that was Wilfred Emmanuel Jones, aka the Black Farmer. What a character. I really enjoyed talking to somebody so rebellious, and I'd love to know what Gordon Ramsay has to say about him teaching him everything he knows about TV. Now for the key info I promised at the start. Setting up a food and drinks business or turning yourself into a brand requires hard work, some risks, and the willingness to put yourself out there even when it's controversial or the market research says otherwise. I always tell people starting out in food businesses to go online and check out The Young Foodies, The Prince's Trust, and a Facebook group called The Food Hub, which are all fantastic for networking opportunities or asking questions from people who are in the same boat. If you're looking for financial help outside of crowdfunding or similar, look at a site called startuploans.co.uk, which has low interest rates and lots of great free online courses, everything from mental well-being to bookkeeping. As Wilfred said, if you love your idea, try not to worry too much about what other people think and celebrate your mistakes as long as you're learning from them, and then move forward quickly. Thank you, Wilfred, for speaking with us, and good luck as your business expands. And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.